Welcome to Inspired Radio with Helen Taylor. Get ready to be inspired. Stories have power and conversations spark change. So let's create a new world and get started right now.
Hey, good afternoon, Melbourne. Good afternoon, Australia. And good day or evening to all our international listeners too. I'm Helen Taylor. Welcome to my show, Inspired Radio. I'm here with you every Wednesday, 12 noon, Melbourne, Australia time, and Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central time for the US. For conversations and stories to inspire you, this is the BBS platform, and we're going live to 190 plus outlets worldwide. Firstly, before we start, I just want to say thanks to our sponsors. Thank you. You keep the show alive. So thank you very much to each and every one of you. Inspired Radio is all about change and getting uncomfortable and shaking up the status quo. Today's guest, Professor Ian Brighthope. He is someone who doesn't just talk about change, he actively challenges the systems that shape our health, our well-being, our governance and our world. Ian has long been a prominent advocate for more informed, empowered approaches to personal and public health in Australia, but his work doesn't stop just there. He's also become a strong voice for transparency and disclosure across multiple levels of society, asking the kinds of questions many may shy away from, and he encourages others to do the same. More recently, he stepped into the national conversation in a bold way, co-authoring a manifesto exploring the idea of secession in Western Australia. It's a move that sparked debate, curiosity, and a re-examination of how we think about governance in this country. Whether you agree or disagree, he's undoubtedly a voice that provokes thought, and that's a good thing. Welcome, Ian.
Thanks, Helen, and hello, everybody. It's nice to be with you.
Yes, yes. So let's provoke some thinking, hey?
Sure.
You write a lot of Substack articles, and at the end of the show we'll let people know how they can find those. But you wrote one recently that was about the Libel Act. Can you tell me about that?
The Libel Act.
Mm. That was talking about a bill being introduced to the United States Congress seeking to remove the long-standing liability protections that the manufacturers of all those jabs out there have.
Well, I've written so many things. When you said the Libel Act, you pulled out something that I'd forgotten about. But the Libel Act is I mean, in the US and Australia and the UK and the Western world, when you manufacture something, you manufacture it to good manufacturing practices, and the product is meant to serve the purpose that it's meant for.
Yep.
And if the product doesn't serve the purpose, you build a car and it's got faulty brakes, or you design an aeroplane and it has windscreen wipers that don't clean the windscreen, then you're liable to be sued. Is that not correct?
Yep, absolutely. Agree.
Okay, so every company in the world, every industry in the world manufactures whatever they manufacture. They may manufacture widgets. If the widgets are not safe, if they're ineffective, then you can sue the manufacturer.
Sure.
Every industry except one, and that's the pharmaceutical industry, particular part of the pharmaceutical industry that manufactures vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an act passed in 1986 in the US which made vaccine manufacturers immune to prosecution.
It just blows your mind, doesn't it?
It really does. And it leaves everybody open to injury and death, and there is no recourse whatsoever.
Yes.
No recourse whatsoever. So people are taking action in the US. There is an act in the US. It's for vaccine injuries. And if if somebody has been injured, then they can go and sue the government, but not the manufacturer. the manufacturers held the particular president at the time when this was passed, and it was I think it was President was later than Nixon. I think it was, look, it doesn't really matter who the president was. It was the politicians were held over a barrel because the manufacturer said, we are not going to manufacture any more vaccines if we're going to be sued. And so they held the US government over a barrel. And so the president at the time passed this particular act, and it's been law ever since. We cannot sue the manufacturers here in Australia. We can sue the government, but the government doesn't take any responsibility. So the
Do you think that's when the trend started? The trend of passing responsibility, shirking responsibility? Because I'm thinking about just through the COVID last 6 years, right? The federal government didn't want to be responsible for anything that was going on. So they just passed it over to the state governments, and the state governments didn't want to be responsible. So they passed it over to business owners, companies, corporations. It's like, is that where it all started, this crazy thinking?
Well, it didn't start. It started pr prior to 1986, but it's really got so much worse since COVID because it was number one, the vaccine that was claimed to be made was not a vaccine. It's a genetic therapy. It's a gene therapy. So they changed the definition of vaccine to include the gene therapies, so that COVID vaccines were included as gene as vaccines. And not as gene therapies. We have a law in this country where gene therapies must be approved by the Office of Gene Control, and it wasn't. It never ever got to that office, apart from Moderna having some approval. But the entirety of COVID was based on this false belief that the COVID vaccines, as they claimed they were safe and effective, and most of us fell for it. Most of us fell for it,
I think
and
most of us cringe when we hear safe and effective these days.
well, we do, and we've got every right. Everything that the doctor does,
Like post-traumatic syndrome, as soon as you hear safe and effective.
yeah, I mean, it should alarm everybody when you hear safe and effective, and so. The liability in the US is being challenged in one or two states, and the cases haven't been heard yet, but they're being worked on, so that eventually the vaccine industry may be not exempt from liability and from being sued. I hope that happens because then they will really carefully look at the vaccine schedules we have in Australia as well as overseas, because the vaccine manufacturers may stop manufacturing vaccines. I mean, if the West becomes more and more totalitarian, then we've got no chance of beating the big tech companies. But if we stay as a democracy, then we should be able to have our say and have our say in the courts, including the High Court of Australia.
Because even as you're saying, like there's a bill being introduced, right? I mean, there's cynicism in the back of my mind straight away going, really? How many bills and how many royal commissions and how many all sorts of other things that, we all kind of go, yay, all right, there's some change coming, and they all just peter out or disappear.
Yes, they do, and that's why we're persistent with well, I'm persistent, and I'm going to stay persistent while I'm on this beautiful
On this
planet of ours.
planet.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep on talking about the harmful effects of the vaccines, the harmful effects of the vaccine industry, and the harmful effects of the medical industry, because the medical industry has hijacked health, and health has been hijacked in such a way that when you go to the doctor, you're not made healthy. You are given a drug generally, and the drug may help to control symptoms, it may help to control your disease, but it's not going to make you healthy. And the drug actually adds an extra burden on your detoxification mechanism. So my whole reason for existence is the belief that sickness and illness are one of two things, or both. One is an over supply of toxins into the system, or a deficiency of nutrients and or sunlight and clean water and all of these things. So if you can get to those two things, Helen, and you have to drill down deeply, because there's not just one toxicity, or not one just one single nutrient deficiency. There are many of these things, and that's where the art and science of medicine really does prevail.
And those things that you're talking about, so the toxicity, whether it's in our environment or our food, or it's everywhere, and it's quiet, right? It's quietly kind of crept into our lives. And the body, the human body, is a pretty formidable thing. It adjusts to all of these different toxins. And they contribute then, don't they, to the deficiencies that we've
I
got?
do. It's a spiral downhill, and the deficiency can also be a deficiency of a spiritual element of your life. It can be a deficiency of your psychological issues, and a toxicity can be a toxic relationship. It doesn't necessarily have to be a heavy metal like lead, mercury, cadmium, and arsenic, or organophosphate pesticide and herbicide residues. It can be another sort of toxicity. And these are the psychosocial aspects of healthcare. And this is what I've been pushing for so long now, and it's catching on. There's a lot of people working in this area now, not just doctors, but other healthcare practitioners who are doing a very, very good job.
Well,
So that's it.
that flags the next thing I want to ask you about, because what you're talking about are new ideas. For a lot of people out there, they're new ideas in looking at their lifestyle and looking at their health and their well-being and taking some sort of control and changing things, right? So, you mentioned in one of your articles, you talked about questioning dominant paradigms, right? And I love the word paradigm, because what we're talking about is creating a new one. And
That's right.
creating a new one, you would have seen this because you've been challenging the systems, the paradigms for a long, long time. But one, there's trouble creating new paradigms, right? Because, you're kind of stepping out on the edge and you're creating something new, and it needs to gain momentum. And we're all fighting or resisting or wanting change from very powerful paradigms that have a lot of collective consciousness and energy. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, and I'm fully conversant with what you're talking about, Helen. The change in a paradigm means a change in the framework that you're working in, and we're slowly changing it. We're slowly, slowly changing it, so that the older is left out and the new come in. And it's not just a two-dimensional one; it's a three-dimensional one. It's like a sphere.
I'd like to think it's multidimensional, actually.
Absolutely. So we can't do without medicine and surgery and operations and scanners and these sort of things. We'll need them for a long time to come. If I had my way, within 2 or 3 generations, we'd have a very, very strong shift away from orthodox medicine and orthodox control. Whether I get my way or not, or we get our way, I don't know. But I think we're approaching the crest of a wave, I think, with the change that's happening in the world, with these wars and with COVID and all of the massive changes that have occurred over the last 6 to 7 years. I think, certainly integrative healthcare, integrative medicine, integrative psychology, integrative oncology, these things are happening. They're happening very, very slowly, but they're catching on more and more, because people are sick and tired of getting sick. They're sick and tired of going to the doctor, and the doctor giving them a drug that's going to just cover their symptoms most of the time, without getting to the root cause of the problem. And that's what I'm on about, getting to the root cause. I
I
mean,
would say that most people don't have a clue what it would feel like to actually be extremely healthy.
yeah, I know. It's just I mean, I can't believe the number of people I see in my coffee shop, for example, the restaurants down my way, who are almost invalids. They're walking around with a sad expression on their face. They're walking slowly. And I mean, these are middle-aged people who
Yes.
are like they're like old people. And I blame the vaccine for a lot of this, the COVID vaccine I'm talking about.
Yep.
I'm blaming the vaccine for a lot of early deaths, for a lot of the turbo cancers that we're seeing.
Well, you'd have a lot more exposure than I, so I'm listening. I'm listening.
Well, I hope your listeners are listening because they are the most powerful people for change in this world. And the important thing for us is to try and get the message out to people that you can do something. Just one person can help to make some changes. And it doesn't take much effort. It just takes a little bit of
Well,
understanding about how to live.
I'd even suggest that if one person's going to make some change, don't do it on your own. Go find someone else to do it with, right? Go and find a little group, go and find a little organization, because as soon as you start to want something better, something happens, doesn't it? It's like just start to bump into someone and have a conversation, or you read a book, or you see an article, or something like that. One of your articles. That's where I'd suggest everybody starts. They just get onto Substack and they start reading some, because you read one of, I have to tell this to everybody, you read one of Ian's articles, it just makes you thirsty for the next one and the next one, because they really get you thinking. And we need to. Gosh, we can either be complacent and let the world keep going the way that it is, or you can, help us to create and create momentum for this new paradigm. We need everybody focused on it, don't we?
We do. And I think the momentum is catching on. I think it doesn't take much to see some change in people. It's just that the first step is usually the most difficult. I say to people, if you want to make a change, just get up half an hour earlier and go for a walk. That's a very simple thing to do, and that will start your day very, very well. Especially if you go
Absolutely.
out and you get the early morning sunshine.
And
But
I'd recommend hugging a tree in there too, somewhere.
you hug a tree when you get to the 100 meter mark. You can hug another tree when you get to 200 meter mark. You can hug trees all the way, because I mean that's connecting you with the roots of the earth, and the roots of the earth connect you with the entire globe, because the entire globe is connected. We're all connected. And we need, I mean, I'm always harping about peace in the world. We need peace in the world. We need wellness. We can't achieve peace. We can't achieve wellness if we're having fights and wars. And we've got to learn how to live to one, with one another. I'm very, very serious about this, Helen. I think I've played a small role in helping people attain peace within their own home. When the husband is drinking a lot of alcohol, he's got vitamin B deficiencies, and you give him vitamin B and he starts behaving again. Or the woman of the household is suffering from premenstrual syndrome, and you give her some dietary advice, tell her to get off sugar and get onto something healthy, and you've got a much more peaceful home. I
Moods
mean,
start to stabilize.
mood stable, yeah, mood stabilizes. And we all we all think we like a drink. I don't like drinking anymore. I wasn't ever a heavy drinker, but I've seen my friends going downhill, and they drink and drink and drink, and may suffer from a brain blockage like early Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease, and it makes them worse. And we know that there is a thing in our brains called the glymphatic system, and that helps us to, if we get it working, have a good night's sleep, have plenty to drink, fluids, warm fluids to drink before we go to bed. The whole thing will change, and we can have a much healthier population. and it doesn't really
I
take
want to
very much.
just I just want to ask you about that. I knew the body had a lymphatic system, and it wasn't too long ago that I knew that the brain did. That's a pretty incredible thing. And that's part of the waste disposal system, right? You've gone on mute.
Sorry, Helen, I've just somebody's just coming home, and I've just told them I'm doing a
Oh,
recording with them.
right.
So
Okay, thank you. Yes.
thanks, Ned.
The lymphatic system in the brain, what is that for?
For draining the excess toxins out of the brain. I
Absolutely.
mean,
Absolutely.
every brain cell that we have is like a liver cell. It's got the enzymes to detoxify itself. It needs a rest. It needs to detoxify. And so the extracellular space in the brain receives these toxins from all of the very active nerve cells, and it's got to get rid of it. And as we get older, the lymphatic system starts failing, and there's a buildup of toxins in our system. And this is the reason we see the degenerative changes in the nervous system in older people.
Because
And
the
we can,
drains are blocked, right? The drains block.
the drains are blocked, their brain drains are blocked. And I mean, there are two sorts of brain drain. There's a brain drain from the country, and there's a brain drain in your own brain, and that's the one I'm talking about.
Yes.
And you know, it's not too hard to get it working again. You've just got to see the right people and do the right things, and you know, make sure you get a little bit of exercise every day. Going for a half an hour to an hour, half an hour walk, brisk walk, is incredibly effective in helping people. You know, these simple lifestyle things that people who live in the blue zones in the world, like in Sardinia and South America, where Japan, for example, the people live to over 100 and they're healthy, and they don't go and have a lot of vitamin injections, and they don't go and have a lot of, you know, fancy hyperbaric oxygen therapies and so forth to keep themselves young. They have a very, very simple lifestyle,
Cleaner.
clean lifestyle. They exercise, they're active all the time, and they have in their diet a lot of antioxidants, a lot of fish, a lot of olive oil, a lot of the thing that's common amongst the seven or eight blue zones where people do live a long, healthy life. The one thing that they all do, one thing that they all do,
Drum roll, drum roll. Yep.
very, very simple. They all consume fermented foods
Fermented foods.
like sauerkraut, kimchi, yogurt, and so on.
Yep.
So their fermented foods keep their gut very, very healthy
And active.
and
Yep.
active. Yes.
Stimulated,
Yeah.
whatever the word is you want to use. Yes.
Whatever you want to use, yeah. So it's very important that
So move, just move people, just start
moving,
there. But you know what I must say as well, because then I've seen it this time and time and time again, that as soon as people start moving and the drainage system starts to shift, you're going to get aches and pains. You're going to have your body talk back at you. And you know what I think surprises me more than anything is that most people don't know their own body well enough to know that when it's cleaning itself up and when it's trying to repair and get to a better place, it hurts.
Yep, that's right. So you've got to go through a little bit of pain before you get the gain.
Yes.
And it makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Know thyself. I mean, the two ancient Greek maxims were know thyself, know yourself, and everything in moderation,
Yes.
including moderation.
I went on a 5-day fast just recently, and within 2 days after I finished, my left ankle blew up overnight. It blew up. And by the third morning, I couldn't walk on it. I couldn't walk on it. Now, for me, I just go, okay. Something's going on down there. The body's doing what it needs to do because obviously during that fast, something has shifted. I will never know the ins and outs of what was going on in that ankle, but I just hobbled around and took it easy for the 24 hours and it was gone. But it inflamed, it was red, it was sore, it
Had
was.
you ever injured it in the past?
Could have.
Because we, when I was working in the local hospital, I put patients in the hospital and fast them. And these were all different sorts of patients. They were both psychiatric patients as well as patients with physical problems. And we did a 4 to 7 day fast with most people. The longest fast I ever did was 21 days. But the 4 to 7 day fast, they'd go through a period of, an uncomfortable period. They go through a period of hunger. They go through a period of anxiety, some depression. And then after 4 days or so, they were fine and feeling really good. But during that time, quite a number of them would say, "Look, my shoulder hurts, or my ribs hurt, or my stomach hurts here." And so we would say, "Well, have you ever had a problem with these areas?" And I would say, "Yes, I had a fractured shoulder a long time ago." Or another one would say, "I had a gallbladder problem, and the gallbladder has been taken out, but they're getting the pain where the gallbladder was." And it was very interesting. They go backwards in their history. Really, really interesting.
Yes, the body's retracing and doing something.
So that's why I asked you if you'd had any past history with your ankle, because it's possible. I mean, if you hadn't gone through a week's fast, it may not have happened, but you would have had, let's say, something in your system that was telling your system that it wasn't quite right. So you might have had a slight pain in the ankle for a period of time, but it's possibly resolved your toxicity problems to a large extent. I take my hat off to you for doing it. I think it's very, very good.
I've done it so many times that I absolutely trust this body and it keeps talking to me. And the only way your body can talk to you is through pain and discomfort. It doesn't have a language. It can't say, "Hi, Helen. Hi, Ian. I need some attention here." But it will get your attention. And given the right environment, it will heal itself as
It
well.
will, yeah.
And that's
It's
why I wanted to share it. So people get walking and there will be some discomfort.
absolutely. I think if everybody just sits back and has a think about their lifestyle right now, what am I going to do to help myself? Probably the simplest thing is just sitting, putting your hands on your lap, closing your eyes, and humming. And just doing nothing. And then what happens is the insight into your lifestyle starts to happen. I'm rushing in the morning. I'm eating too much sugary things. I'm drinking too much alcohol. I'm taking too many tablets. You start realizing that your lifestyle is con the contributor, the major contributor to your unwellness. And that unwellness will eventually become a disease, because
And
that's
what
the
you're saying is you're asking them to sit and be still and listen.
listen to your own body. Listen to it very, very carefully, because it's the only one you've got.
And another rule of thumb that I have as well is I look at everything that's extremely popular and I wonder why it's extremely popular. Like alcohol, for instance, right? It's like it's not good.
No, it's a toxin.
You sit down, you look back at the first time you ever had an alcoholic drink. I mean, the first thing your body wanted to do was throw up.
Well, the first time I ever had a drink was a disaster for me, because I wasn't used to it. And I had my drink, and I just went home, and just I don't I couldn't do anything and just lie in my bed. And it's been like that ever since. Although I have been able to drink, but and I'm not a I wouldn't say I'm anywhere near a drinker. It tells me that it's poison, and it is. I mean, if I want to take something and preserve it, I put it in a bottle of alcohol.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Yeah, well, that's my rule of thumb was to look at whatever's popular doesn't actually seem to be the best things for us. But, because the tribe, we like to be a part of the tribe and to do what everybody else is doing and be accepted, we push past the uncomfortableness. I mean, if your body wanted to go home and it just felt awful, there's a pretty clear indication there about whether it's good for you or not.
That's right. I mean, sugar is another thing. I mean,
Yep.
you get somebody who's a sugar addict or a chocolate addict off sugar for a period of time, and then they go back onto it. They say it's awfully sweet. It's yucky sweet.
Yep.
And that's the whole thing. You know, a little bit of sugar stimulates the dopamine receptors in the brain. Dopamine starts pouring out. So you have a bit more and a bit more and a bit more, and you end up with a sugar addiction. You end up on a roller coaster going up and down, up and down, up and down with your blood
Yeah.
sugars. Your insulin's going up and down, up and down. And your mood is going up and down because your
Yes.
brain is receiving a lot of sugar and then no sugar, a lot of sugar, then no sugar.
And you
And this
think
is.
that that mood changes because of some of the people around you,
Yeah.
right? People don't actually sit, like you said earlier, and just be quiet and have a think about why the moods are changing because it's what's going on inside of you. But from personal experience, it's not just sugar like in chocolates and stuff, right? It's what's in food because times where I would not do sugar. And in foods like carbohydrates as well. And then I'd get back into it, I'd have a meal. I would have what I called a sugar coma, where within half an hour I needed to lie down and I would go off to sleep and it'd be like this deep, really uncomfortable sleep. And that was because of the food.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, your brain is different to other people's brains. It put you to sleep and made you feel yucky. But other people have changes in their brain, changes in perception, changes in mood, changes
Wow.
in perception in particular. They start becoming schizoid-like. They end up with a schizoid-like syndrome. And this is what happens with people who have got schizophrenia and schizoid type personalities and depressive type
Wow,
situations.
I did not know that.
It's called functional reactive hypoglycemia, and it plays a very important role in nearly all psychiatric patients.
Wow,
Yeah,
that's
and
sugar.
it's sugar and sugar-like substances like alcohol and white flour products. So I tell everybody, no sugar, no white flour, no alcohol.
Soft drinks.
Soft drinks out completely.
Yep.
I mean, we're in Germany, for example, where a large consumption of soft drinks, like 10 to 12 soft drinks every day,
Yep.
you have children with behavioral problems and psychiatric problems.
Yes.
And it's very common.
And they were putting it down to food dyes or additives and things like that, weren't they? Trying to distract people. No, it's not sugar. It's not the sugar.
No, it's not the sugar. It was the sugar was the main contributor to it. I mean,
Yes.
the red dyes and the yellow dyes were playing their role, of course. But it's never just one simple thing, but
I
there's
had
all that.
no idea it could create such extreme. Mental or psychiatric issues with people.
Yeah, well, in a number of my substacks, I write about it. I put up every chapter out of my book on the chronic fatigue syndrome is a Substack going back 2 years into Substack, and I write about the toxicity of the sugar and the white flour products and the alcohol, and how addictive they are, and when you get off them, quite a large number of your symptoms and disease processes will be controllable or even ameliorated. So
Right.
it's very important what we're putting into our mouths. So this is what I talk about with RFK Jr. and his attempts in the US to make changes in terms of
The
the health
food
of children.
pyramid.
Yeah, and the food pyramid, which has been turned upside down.
Wow. I mean, I don't know why that, didn't go out there more and more, in mainstream media because that's incredible to let the people know that they were deceived to such a great extent that the pyramid was completely inverted.
Yeah, it's bizarre, you know, it really is. Now they're on the top of the pyramid, is like that. And at the top, you've got steak and eggs and chicken wings and chicken, turkey and so forth, and
Yep.
butter and cream and all of the things that were negative before,
All the
are now
fats and
very.
proteins, yes.
I mean, fat is an important part of our diet, and
An
we.
incredible part of our diet, yes.
So I think sugar's been put in its place by RFK Jr., but it hasn't really got out to the people. I think,
New paradigm,
yes,
isn't it?
that's right. We can be very, very advanced here in Australia with our food if we just took notice of what they're doing in the States
Yep.
and what we're writing about. I mean, there's always going to be resistance. There will always be pushback from the food industry. The food industry is responsible for a large number
All of
of
it.
chronic
All
illnesses.
of it.
Yeah,
Yep.
the food and the drug industry—they're both responsible for so many of our illnesses and diseases that we really do need to change them. We need to get away from the drugs and the vaccines. I mean,
Well,
there's
people
never.
need to realize, though, that they're a business, aren't they? This is big business, and big business sitting around in a boardroom does not have your health and well-being as a primary target, does it?
It never does, it never has, never will.
Yeah.
They're basically looking at making a simple product and putting it together and selling it for a
And
fortune.
selling it, and selling it. And then they'll tell you that it's not about the profits, it's about the shareholders.
Yes, oh, of course, about the shareholders. There's so many shareholders now and people with superannuation funds. I mean,
Yes.
it's a vicious cycle.
It is.
It's got to be broken. I mean, you only need three things. You need white flour, seed oil, and some water and salt and sugar and a bit of flavoring. You can do anything. You can make anything. You can make ice cream. You can make pancakes. You can basically out of some of the very simple compounds that are available. And this is part of my fight that I've got in terms of the food industry and the drug industry.
Yep.
But I've taken the fight not to them because they will not listen. They'll only listen when their profits are being affected.
Yes.
It's the people that I'm concerned about, the people that are making themselves sick with I mean, you go into a supermarket, nearly every shelf has got processed foods on it, and you know the various well they've got fresh foods as well, and they've got organic foods, some of them. But the organic section of the supermarket is much smaller than the fresh foods, and the fresh foods are much smaller than the processed foods and the tins, packets, cans, and you know what.
Yep.
So,
I don't know if I even trust the labels of organic these days, Ian, to be honest. My little rule of thumb was just go local, guys, just go local. I won't walk into a Woolworths or a Coles. I will not frequent big business like that. I look for local, like in terms of fruit and veg and meat and even small grocery lines. Just try and yeah, let's just drain the resources for the bigger guys, right? And yeah, just go small.
I agree. I mean, if we go local, and this is what we're trying to do with our attempt to decentralize and actually secede Western Australia from the rest of Australia, is actually local governance rather than centralized government, because centralizing everything is unwise. I mean, the only thing we need to really centralize is our self-defense, is our defense mechanisms. The rest we can do very well locally,
Yes.
with local government, local
Yes.
councils, because local means we've got some input. We have
We got
a few
control. We got control of
control.
what's going on.
And it basically brings our democracy back to a democracy.
Yeah.
But we've lost our democracy here in Victoria. I mean,
Yes, we have.
when COVID came, we lost our right to freedom of speech. As a doctor, I was not allowed to tell people that the vaccines were dangerous. They were not effective, and we lost the ability to give full, free, informed consent and refusal, and that is a breach of the Nuremberg Code, which was
Human
from
rights. human
human
rights.
rights. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we lost our that freedom, and that's one of the reasons why I'm behind this secession of Western Australia as a start to decentralize governance from Canberra. And Western Australia is the state to start with because it's it
It's already had a go at it a couple of times, right?
Yes, it's had a go at a couple of times, and you know there was a lot of people behind it. I mean, 46% of the population wanted to secede.
I saw an article that said 65%.
It's possibly much higher
That
than
was in
that.
the 1930
Yes,
second round with it, because they tried it in the early 1900s
that's
and
right.
1930s. Yeah, I read somewhere about 65%, but even 40 something percent, they wanted it. The
Yeah,
people wanted it.
people want it, and they have to be given a good reason for wanting it. And the good reason is the resources in Western Australia are enormous, and they are our resources. They are owned by the people. They are not the governments. They are not the miners. They are ours, and we sell them. We give the miners the right to mine them, and they, of course, have to make a profit. But they're making billions and billions and billions of dollars of profit, and it's going into their pockets.
It's not going back to the people.
It's not going back to the people who own it, and that's why one of the reasons, another reason that I'm behind this secession, because we want to see less GST going into Canberra and being wasted on projects that are highly wasteful. We don't want to see fat bureaucrats taking huge incomes and sitting around just paper shuffling, because that's what million-dollar bureaucrats are doing in Canberra. And people realize what's happening in, for example, in health. They hardly ever answer the questions, and when they do, the answers are often bizarre. So we need to have a bureaucracy where people are held responsible for their jobs and then the jobs that they're doing, and that's what.
Those bureaucrats have got to, at any time they get asked questions, because I've watched a lot of Parliament and all the rest of it, it's, I'll take that on notice. I'll take that on notice. They're the minister for that portfolio, but they don't know the answers, so
I
they
know.
go and figure it out. I don't know. I
I
don't like
mean,
it.
I don't like it either. I mean, I've seen some of the ministers, I won't mention any names, put so many things on notice, and never ever gets, never comes back. Or if it does, it comes back in a very weak form.
All statistics or figures and meaningless statements and paper, really.
Exactly.
Because they're just spinning wheels and doing a job and spinning figures and words because they get paid for it. I heard, your co-author with the manifesto for succession, Julian Gillespie, say, that if secession goes through with WA, one of the things that's going to happen is 65% of the bureaucracy will be gone, because so much of bureaucracy in every state of Australia is set up to feed information back to Canberra.
That's
So,
right.
and it's like, and they're just spinning wheels backwards and forwards and keeping the illusion that they're all doing things and they're getting things done and they're progressing this beautiful, magnificent country into a wonderful future. And all of us here know that that hasn't been happening for decades. And so to know that 65% of that bureaucracy will be gone is an enormous amount of money that
It
will be
is.
available to the
Yeah.
people.
It's an enormous amount of money, and there's an enormous amount of money coming out of Western Australia that should be held and reinvested in Western Australia, and that's something that I'm very strong on about. The other thing is that we should be self-sufficient in this country. We have all the resources. We should be self-sufficient with respect to energy, in particular, but we can do anything in this country, including manufacturing cars and boats and planes.
We've done it before.
We've done it all before. Why have successive governments allowed, for example, cars to be manufacturers to go offshore when we can do it ourselves and do it very well?
I agree.
Why? I mean, it's
Our
so.
industry, our resources got sold off one after the other.
I mean,
Should never have happened.
South Korea, most of the people in South Korea drive either a Kia or a the other brand in South America. My brain is not working the best this afternoon.
The other Asian brand.
The
Okay.
other Asian variant, but they all are very patriotic and they drive their own motor cars. We are not very patriotic here. We want to go for the BMWs and the Mercs and all of these other fancy cars, whereas we could be manufacturing high quality machinery here. And it's to me a crying shame that we have let it go. We still have the patriotism in this country, but it's far and few between in the state of Victoria. We need to actually encourage it in Western Australia and make Western Australia the beacon for the other states, so the other states can follow us, and we take Canberra out of the governance equation in the country. We make sure it's local governance, and the only reason we have anything like a Canberra is for our own self-defence.
Well, I'm going to be watching every step of the way with great interest because, for the last probably 10 years, I've been a part of different groups and different setups, people wanting something different, people looking at the constitution, looking at our governance, looking at it from all different angles. But what I've found, and I've interviewed a lot of the leaders of these movements and things as well, what I've found is that the whole, we get back to paradigms, right? When it was a first paradigm, when it started, it was like, I just want to live off the land, I just want to be left alone. And it's growing, and it's getting legs and arms and all sorts of things because, with you guys, I saw though that it's getting more educated and intelligent conversation. It's like it's getting bones now. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's got the bones, just the matter of putting the flesh on the bones.
Everybody thinks they've got the right way to do it and all the rest of it, but I think that the momentum is really starting to build and the reality is starting to become clearer and clearer about the possibilities of what we are capable of doing. Because Julian said one other thing in his interview as well. The one thing that people have clearly forgotten, the government's supposed to do what you want.
That's right. The government are our servants, but they're telling
That's
us that what we have to do, and
it.
that's the opposite way to how a democracy works.
Yep.
And I mean, all of these issues are going to be determined by the people of Western Australia, not by Julian or myself or
Yes.
Gigi Foster or Michael. We're the four authors of the book. I'm a very small author. Julian did most of it, and Gigi did a lot of the economics with him. But they emphasized throughout the whole of this launching of the book and all of our conversations that it's up to the people of Western Australia to take the bones of the book and put the flesh on.
And that's where I think they're going to, because it's already run a couple of cycles in WA, that's where I think they've already got this, quiet support.
Oh yes. I mean, I've got the chapters of the book here, and everything is covered in the book that we could think of, or that Julian and Gigi could think of,
Yes.
and
Oh yes, people listening, they've thought this thing through. If Western Australia becomes independent, they've thought about how that operates on all sorts of different levels, haven't they?
yeah, I mean, from the law, the economics of it, the fiscal feasibility of an independent Western Australia.
Because their lawyer, one's a lawyer and one's an
That's
economist.
right.
Well.
I mean, giving local councils the power to make the decisions for them. Wouldn't that
Yes.
be brilliant? You know, you go
Yes.
to your local council and say, "This is what we want. This is what we need."
And they've taken, they also refer to Dubai and Qatar. It's like These places had rich, incredible resources, or still have, I should say, and don't, nobody pays income tax. The
No.
country and its resources keep the country alive and rich and well.
Yeah, well, that's what our resources should be used for, because our modelling is that we won't be paying any tax. The only tax we'll pay is GST, and probably be about 5%.
And then some money to those local council groups that are still going to be absolutely necessary. I remember him saying that.
So there's, it's very exciting.
It is.
It and will I move across? I probably will.
That was the next thing I thought. I was talking to someone about it this morning, and he said, "Oh my gosh, there might be some mass migration to WA." And I thought, I hadn't considered that.
No, the people I've spoken to, if their friends and family move across, they'll all move across. Politicians have said, "Oh, it's going to be a very interesting situation." I'm thinking of going across myself. So,
And how's this going to happen? So if you've got the manifesto that you've all co-authored, right? So what's next?
well, what's next is education of the people, telling everybody what is going to happen, or what we think is going to happen. How we manage that is going to require an organisation, an institute called the Core West Institute, and that will bring in all of the parties, all of the experts, all of the people who've got something to say, and will be the people who involve will be determining what the people of West Australia want and how they want it to look. So the issues will be teased out over a period of time, Helen, and that's the important thing, that we give ourselves a few years to actually get to the end point, when there will be a party established, and that party will go to government, and if it gets in, that will be the referendum. I think that's the way that's being envisioned at the
And the
moment.
last time with the referendum, though, and there was the huge yes vote for it all, it then got knocked off by the British Parliament, didn't it? So can that happen again, or?
No, it can't, because the last time we went to the British government, they said, "No, it's not our domain. You go back and sort it out yourselves." And then it fizzled out. So it's not going to fizzle out. This is not going to fizzle out. This is
Yes, no, I get
now.
that. It's getting momentum,
It
absolutely.
is, and I mean, we've been called all sorts of names by the powers that be, but they are fearful of losing their power. They're fearful of losing. I mean, the Labor and Liberal governments have done very little to advance this country, and they basically argue over so many small things that the big issues of this country have been secondary. And it's not good to allow a country to deteriorate the way we have, when we've got so many resources at our hands and
Absolutely.
fingertips.
I agree. And I
So,
think that's it simply in a nutshell, isn't it? Our
yeah, it
country's
is.
going to the dogs, and it shouldn't be. We should all have an incredible level of lifestyle and, economy and industry.
I mean, the economy will be based on a new currency, and the currency will be based on what's in the soil. So it'll be hard currency. It'll be a very firm base for our new
That's what I
currency.
mean. You guys have really got bones to this, because 10 years ago I was listening to people who just wanted a bit of land and grow their veggies. And that has then, everyone's looked at the constitution and the law and new systems and changing the current systems. They've looked at it from all different angles, but you guys have taken it to another level. And I want to watch that with interest. And for anyone who's listening, I'm going to interview Julian Gillespie, and we'll get more into what it's about. But in the meantime, if people want to find out about it, where can they go, Ian?
They can go to, I'll give you the website. There is a book that they can buy. It's look, I'll give you the website when we get off
And I
the
can put
call
that
here.
up with your interview on all the socials and everything, okay? But for people, because I know that you've got to go, you've got things you've got to do. So for people who want to get in touch with you, firstly, there's WOW, right?
World
of Wellness, which is all about you and it's all about health. And I'll give people the website. It's wowintl.org. Okay. And that will be with the show notes as well. So don't worry, people, if you didn't get that down. And Substack, how do they get in touch with you, Ian, with Substack?
They just get the Substack app, go into apps on the phone, get the Substack app, and then they look for me by just typing in Ian Brighto, one word.
Fabulous.
Okay.
Fabulous.
So I'm
Ian.
substack.ianbrighthope.
Substack.ianbrighthope.
Yes.
Ian, thank you. It's been a pleasure. We've just gone from, this topic to that topic, and it's rich. It's rich, beautiful conversation, and I'm sure you've inspired many people today. Thank you so much for your time once
You're
again.
welcome, Helen. Thank you for having me.
You're
It's been a
welcome.
pleasure.
It's a pleasure every single time. Thank you, Ian.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Inspired Radio with Helen Taylor live on BBS Radio TV. Join us every Monday at 4 p.m. Melbourne, Australia, AEDT time, for more stories and conversations that will change your world.